When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the 2024 Overlook Film Festival. Give yourselves a round of applause for coming out to movies and live shows all day long, all weekend long. My name is Landon Zackheim. I'm your Crypt Keeper for the weekend. And it is a great, great, great pleasure to welcome you to today's Scream Dreams podcast taping and recording. But you came here to see Catherine Corcoran and Barbara Crampton host one of our favorite podcasts. We are so excited to have Catherine at the festival for the first time, to have our own Barbara Crampton back again. We love having her at the festival. I will let them take it away to the co-hosts of Scream Dreams. Go ahead, Barbara and Catherine. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Landon. Thank you, Michael Lerman.
Thank you, guys, for being here. Can you all hear us okay if we sit back like this? Thumbs up, applause.
Anyone? And if you can't hear us, just say we can't hear you.
Yeah.
So normally we're going to do this kind of like we normally do our show, but we're going to include you guys as well. And typically we start off the show saying, hello, welcome. I am Catherine Corcoran.
I'm Barbara Crampton.
And we're actually missing our third co-host, who is James A. Janisse. We love him so much, but he is at Spookala this weekend. Would you all just say hi, James, so that we can send him and tell him that we miss him? On the count of three. One, two, three. Hi, James!
Woo, we miss you!
Perfect, perfect.
Amazing.
So, Barbara, how has your festival been so far?
It's been great. I'm here with Larry Fessenden's movie, Blackout. And this is, thank you very much. Larry is an icon, and I call him the godfather of indie horror cinema. And he's made this movie. It's a very personal movie to him. Actually, all of Larry's movies are personal movies to him. How many of you have seen his movie, Habit? That's an amazing movie. So he's doing a trilogy of monsters. So he's going to come up with, I don't know if he's even announced this yet, but maybe he has. You're shaking your head. Okay, so he wants to do an amalgamation of some more, another movie with all of the monsters that he's created together. And what's going to happen in that mashup? We'll see. We're also going to do a mashup of our own a little bit later. But yes, I'm here for Blackout and also for Bria Grant's short, MLM.
It's fantastic. If you
guys saw the shorts, and it's playing again on Sunday or?
Noon.
At noon today,
tomorrow.
Tomorrow at noon. You didn't miss it today at noon. No.
You just missed the leggings, unless.
You
missed the leggings.
Yeah, it's based on, you know, sort of like a cult kind of thing, and I play a cult person. So
I would join the cult of Barbara Crampton. Who else would join the cult of Barbara Crampton?
Yeah. Thank you. How have you been enjoying yourself, Kat?
Oh, this is wonderful. This is my first time at the Overlook Film Festival. So thank you guys for having me. It's been so wonderful. Yeah. It's been wonderful. And we've gotten to explore all of New Orleans and all of the amazing, rich, spooky, creepy history that's here. I love it.
There was a wedding last night.
There was.
Yeah. Just a parade wedding.
Here. I would get married here. Would you get married here again? Would you do it all over again?
I would, to the same man. Yeah,
to the same man? Sure. Oh,
yeah.
Bob.
Yeah. And I know a lot of men who would marry you, Catherine, so.
Yeah. You know, it's a work in progress. I'm taking recommendations.
If you know anybody, let us know. She's single.
Please don't do that.
But also, we're here with our guest, who I'm going to introduce to you now. David Dousmelchin. You know, David's here. Yes. We love him. David has had numerous roles, from the Ant-Man franchise to the Dark Knight to the Polka Dot Man and the Suicide Squad to Dune. He's a performer who's so unique and quirky that for many years, he was kind of like this chameleon among the very best of the young character performers, eliciting responses from fans and audiences and journalists alike of, there's that guy. Yeah. Oh my God, that guy, I've seen him before. He's amazing. He looks familiar. I've seen him in so many things. I mean, it seemed like David was everywhere, in blockbusters and indie cinema, in TV and the comic book world with his Count Crowley series. You know, every once in a while, someone appears on the scene. Someone as hardworking and talented and creatively stunning as David, doing the work and building up their resume until they just can't be denied any longer. His turn as Jack Delroy in the indie IFC hit, yes, IFC, let's hear it for IFC. Late Night with the Devil is so strong and kind of effortlessly commanding that everyone is now talking about that guy. He's the man of the hour, the man of the moment in horror. Please welcome David Dalsmalchian.
Yay!
Oh my God, I feel like we're like in the show, in the Jack Delroy show.
We are.
Thank you, Barbara. That was the nicest introduction I've ever gotten in my life.
It's all true.
Really,
and you know,
amazing. Thank you. I feel very honored to be sitting here with you. It's wild that I'm friends with you now, having been a fan of you for so long. It's just the strangest thing. My life is so weird.
Oh my God. Well, we're all fans of you. I mean, I was one of those people that looked at you in all these movies and said, I know that guy. I've seen him in other stuff. And I think it was just like a matter of time before you got this kind of, I mean, you've been amazing in everything, but this role, it was sort of like, if a character is a movie and a movie is about a character, this was it. I mean, it was a perfect marriage, yeah, kind of, I think, your personality and just the story. So how did that come about?
Oh, I mean, it's so weird how any of this stuff ever happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and especially when you're in the indie space and the small budget space. So over the last couple of years, did I lose my voice? There I am.
Oh.
Hi. There it is. Hey, Night Owls. Jack is back. I had gotten to this place where the time and energy that I was putting into things that were, in the indie space was really reserved for my own stuff. Because as you know, it's just something that I am constantly trying to do, get my own projects going, get my own movies going. And a producer who has incredible taste and is incredible at his job, named Roy Lee, who is responsible for some incredible horror films that
Barbarian.
We enjoyed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Barbarian and The Ring. Like Ringu into the English version of The Ring was just like game-changing.
And It.
Oh, It movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Roy and I had met. Interesting about It. We're going to go on some tangents here, okay?
Sure.
So this is why I met Roy Lee. Who's ready for a good story? Mm-hmm. Phil's here. I know Phil likes one of my yarns. I won't put Phil to sleep. I'm so aggressive sometimes about certain things. I talk about this a lot lately when it comes to my own mental health. I have this insane amount of confidence, and yet until recently I didn't realize what a low self-worth that I had, and we'll get into that at some point.
Very
but I think I always had this is what's wild about me. I had the confidence to knock on anybody's door and just kick down any door and go, hey man, and say, I want to make I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of this. So I did kind of like get my way into Roy Lee's office. Roy's a big guy. A big deal. He brought us all Toothless. I mean, think about that beautiful character, right? So I go, Roy, nice to meet you. I loved It. I really think I'm the perfect person for Grown Up Richie because I think I look a lot like Finn Wolfhard, but I'd be great for like the older version. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I don't think I got the I don't think I knew why you were coming here today. I would have told you not to come because that role's already kind of taken. Like, I think Andy already knows who he wants for the role.
So did you like call, I'm sorry to stop you, but did you like call up and just say, I'm David Dalsmalch and I want to come in and
I had auditioned. I auditioned for the first it for Pennywise.
Oh, wow.
And then Roy, I got on Roy's radar somehow, but yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. I was like, I would like to come in and, and meet. So I did. And then he knows who he wants. And I was like, oh damn. So you make good movies, huh? So we just started talking. We spent 3 hours talking about movies and horror and the power of genre filmmaking and what you can do with genre and why I love genre so much and blah, 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 blah. And then we just stayed buddies and we're emailing each other stuff. We see a cool movie. We'd send some stuff. So Roy, out of the blue, sends me this email. He goes, I'm making a movie. It's very small. The directors are brothers. They want you for this role. Mm. I want you for this role. You know, it's small, but will you take a look at it? And I was like, Roy, you're such great taste. Anything you send, I'll look at. So I get this email. I open the script. The first thing I did was I opened the lookbook that the brothers had made.
Colin and Cameron. Who I had dinner with.
Are they the best?
Last week.
They're the best.
When they were in town.
You got to work with them. Oh my God. We got to make this happen.
But yeah.
They go so into the world that they're creating that they had spent so much time making like a digital TV guide, but it was all based around Night Owls and the show and the world of Late Night with the Devil. So I was looking at that. I was like, this is amazing. Then I start reading the script and I was like,
sold.
Yeah. It was so great. And I go, I'm in. He's like, you're gonna have to come halfway around the world. And you know, it's a small movie. Filmed it in Australia. I was the only American in the film. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
That was during COVID, right?
It was COVID. Yeah. So we made the movie about 2.5 years ago. So we were trying to come out of COVID, we were starting to come out of the lockdowns and everything, but it was still very nerve-wracking.
Especially in Australia, because they were
What was the process like? Did you have to quarantine for a couple days ahead of time?
I think I may have had to quarantine for a few days, but it was just like, you know, we had it was explicit in the contracts. Everyone's like, you're vaccinated. You're going to adhere to certain protocols. We got to keep everyone safe. This movie, the budget's so small. There's no way you could go, we've just lost Joe for 6 days. It's not that kind of movie where you could just go, oh, we're going to go stay at a hotel for, you know, you can't do that with this. And so, which is an interesting another sidebar. So I love the project so much. I said, I would like to be creatively involved in a producerial capacity as well. And they were very cool and open to the idea of me coming in as a co-producer with my company, Good Fiend Films, because I said, there's nothing I want to change. I'm not in the business of getting involved in the project and trying to take it apart. But I do feel like if...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Because I couldn't understand why they thought I was the right person for the role of Jack Del Rey. I said, I understand when people go, oh, that guy's going to be the stalker. That guy's going to be the weirdo. That's the guy we got to keep away from the playground. They never say to me, that's the guy that's the charming, fun, like talk show host. You know what I mean? That's not in my wheelhouse.
The Johnny Carson of horror.
Right.
I definitely see that when I look at you. I know it sounds really strange, but like we don't know each other as well as you know Barbara, but in my understanding of you, it's like this maverick who hosts things like the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards and things like that. So for me, it seemed really natural. Was it like, we talk about fears on our show and anxiety and nightmares. Was it kind of this kind of like self-doubt, you know,
biggest
like
imposter fear, syndrome? Biggest fear I'd had about a role in a very long time, if not of my
career. Because it was all on you. Because and when you talk about having self-esteem versus self-confidence and things like that, I kind of agree with you about that. Because I feel like I have a lot of self-confidence. But my self-esteem, maybe we all have that because we all feel like we're trying to prove ourselves all the time, especially creative people.
And yeah. elevating that sense of self-worth, what that yeah. leads to is the kind of like... I guess like serenity or tranquility within the self that then you can just rely upon the self. But yeah. I have often relied upon the approval, the praise, the security, sure. the others. I've been a very codependent person my whole life where I can really like need people's security for me. And, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I love to do in acting is push myself. Of course, I want to go to extremes and I want to manifest and create characters that hopefully absolutely elevate the stories and the other characters within them. But I do think that I can fall into traps and patterns, not even necessarily in like the artistry, but sometimes in like the way I navigate the whole process of it, because it can right. be such a tricky thing doing yeah. what it is that we do. So with this role, I go, this scares me because A, I don't believe I have the skills to convincingly pull off what it would take. That doesn't mean I won't do it, because like I'm doing theater. I remember getting cast in Shakespeare stuff yeah. and going, I am just so far behind those first folio experts and all yeah. that. And going, I know with hard work, mm-hmm. if you work your ass off around the clock and you've got enough time to build up to it, you can get there.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is going to take a lot of work. Secondly, if I drop it, if I totally shit the bed on this thing, the movie's sunk. Like if I show up and yeah. I'm supposed to be like, good evening, Night Owls. This is, yeah, because I do it like this, you know, hey, this is Jack Delroy. Like the movie's not going to work. No one's going to buy it. No one's going to believe it. So that scared me. And then the third thing was there is a very strong similarity, which I hadn't recognized immediately, between Jack Delroy, a man who wears a mask and does this public thing, presents himself as the best version of himself that he hopes that people will, you know, adore and follow. And then the private Jack, who is kind of a mess. And I feel like that often. I yeah. definitely often right. feel like that. So I was so scared, and thankfully, I'm proud of myself that I had the courage to yeah. go when I walked. Yes, this is David. I'm here for you. Hi. I am going to answer that fucking phone. I promise you. I'm going to grab it. I want it.
It's part of the episode.
I want it. I think we should. We should make it part of the episode. I walked through the like cloud of fear. And every time I've done that, whenever I've been willing, and I'm not just talking about acting stuff. I'm talking about taking a new job, moving, yeah. starting a new relationship, whatever those right. things are that really scare the shit out of me. When I'm willing to walk through, there's a difference between intuition and fear. You need to learn how to listen to your intuition. Of course, that's yeah. so important. But sometimes I get confused between right. what's intuition, what is my like yeah. inner voice, and what is actually just fear.
I've heard people talk about intuition as being very... you know, much more quiet
yes.
and much more, you know, soft-spoken than fear. Like our fears can overtake us, yeah. right? But if you allow yourself to be open, and as actors have to be, we have to be open and vulnerable and in the moment. And as you're talking like this, I'm just reminded that as actors, we are always, and creators, we're always looking for a job. So that sense
survival.
Of self-worth and confidence and whatever it is, yeah. you know, we have to keep having other people say yes to us. And we're always in collaboration with others. So it's never, except for maybe your comic books, you know, which is something that you do yourself.
But not even, because yeah. I have collaborated yeah. with an artist and mm-hmm. an editor and a colorist and you know, a whole team. But the reliance that we have upon people saying, yep,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
yes, you. And then when we do the thing, let's say we get to that level, then you've got someone who cares deeply about this story that they're coming to tell.
Yeah.
And you feel this deep sense of respect for the work that's preceded your arrival in the yeah, project. Uh-huh. So me coming on board as actor and producer, I had a great amount of respect for what this small little family of artists down in Australia with no funds had yeah. been building up and putting together to make this thing happen. You show up and you feel a great sense of responsibility yeah. yes. and obligation. And you're yeah. like,
They're relying on you.
And you have to let all of that go. You have to do all the work. You have to do all the work. Mm-hmm. But I was standing backstage preparing to go on to do the first like long Halloween night monologue in late night. And I was as scared as I was when my first day on the set of The Dark Knight, which was the first movie I'd ever done. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing then. And I was like, I feel this way. I absolutely feel
But do you feel, I feel like that every time. I don't know about you, but every time it's like the first day of school for me. Like no matter how many times I do this, no matter how many roles I do, even with this, I didn't sleep last night. I was so nervous, you guys. Like because I just like, I don't know. I think every time I get you into a rhythm after a while with a team where you start to like relax, but every time it scares the shit out of me.
You're doing an amazing job.
Doing great, Catherine.
I never sleep the night before first day of filming.
Yeah.
I can never sleep. Yeah. I took this, I'm shooting a show right now in Toronto called Murderbot. And the night before our first day of filming, I took melatonin for the first time in a long time. And I drank a sleepy time tea and it helped me. I actually got like 4 hours of sleep, which I generally, and it sucks because I always show up for my first day of work.
Exhausted. Like, I know.
I think that's similar, but then after the first day, you're so tired. Yeah. And then you
crash hard.
It's after the first take, after they say action, you know, the director says that.
And that happened on late night because I was backstage, like so scared. And I go out. The door slides open. There's a live band. I mean, what a dream for us as actors.
Amazing.
To be on this set that was like being in a theater.
That's what I was saying. When I watched it, I went to see it this week in theaters with a group of friends. Everyone, please go see it in theaters. This film is doing so phenomenally well in theaters. Right. And the more you go to see it, the more we can make amazing films like this. Yeah. Truly, truly, truly. But we went to see it in theaters. And the note that when we all came out, we were like, I felt like I just watched a play. I'd go see that on Broadway. Like, are they going to give it to him? We totally should put it out there because it was just like I felt like I had just sat through an off-Broadway production
I cut my teeth on the stages of Chicago and walking out and there's that live band playing and there's the lights kind of coming at you here so you can't really see the audience well. There's just shapes out there and you're trying to manufacture this reality in this space that was so conducive to the creative process because we would do these 10-minute long takes. It's like got three cameras running the way they would have on a real TV show back then. And I'm doing that first take, my first big swing at that long-ass monologue, which I was like, oh my God, so many jokes, so many bits. I gotta be good at this. And I did it. And it was, the words were just coming and it was happening. There was a rhythm to it because there is a whole musicality to the presentation of the late night talk show host. And then anybody from Seth Meyer all the way back to Dick Cavett, you've got this form. It's like
I'm wondering the vocal cadences. Were you playing around with
I would watch every night before bed in the time leading up to going to Australia to start working. I would put on YouTube, or if the boys, the directors, would send me some clips, they would get downloadable files. And there was a whole collection of these, mostly period, but then I would also be watching our contemporary talk show hosts because it's just its own. It's like music, right?
Yeah.
And it's like pop jazz in a way. It's got this thing to it that each one has their own specific thing. But I think that's something that's comforting to the nightly audience, to having their little family. Like if it's Conan with the weird pants thing or whatever.
Yeah, they come up with little
Letterman
gestures
with the rim shots, you know, whatever the thing is. I always felt like I needed to do that. So I just listen and get it in my ear because it doesn't come naturally to me. So finding that in my ear was helpful.
So do you think, you know, I mean, you said you were really nervous about this particular role and felt, you know, a great sort of responsibility for it. How do you feel like anything from your past or your past work? Because really you have a big body of work. And if we go back to your early stage work and working in television and then starting with smaller roles in films and then working your way up, was there Was there, and your past history as just a person, as a human being, because, you know, we are all characters within our own universe. It's like, if I'm this character in this situation, what would I do? So what did you bring? And did you feel a certain level of confidence after you started working on it? So I know you said you were nervous the first day you came out, but there must have been a formulation of this. And how did you form it? You formed it by watching a lot of these talk show hosts, but also you came up with your own Jack Delroy. I mean, he is, like, you could have a show, I think.
Yeah, that's just him.
I do think you could have the Jack Delroy
All right. Yeah. I'll do a show.
Right?
Let's do a show. But IFC, okay? Yeah. All right, we're doing a show. So that first long stretch of the monologue, what was great about that, Video Village, the guys were always, like, right here. They were very close. So they were sitting, watching their monitor, Colin and Cameron, 10 feet away from where I was working. So they were always able to talk directly to me. And I first big, long 10-minute take, we got through it. And they, you could feel the authenticity mm-hmm. of like the, they were very,
the response.
Very, very yeah. positive.
Yeah.
And we'd been getting some rehearsal time yeah. in, which really quick, sidebar, I want to get back to your question because it's yep. very important. But we had 5 days blocked out of rehearsal because we knew we needed this thing to like fly. And I had agreed to be like, let's just do some, you know, off book. We'll do some rehearsal for a couple of days so we can really get the patter going and all of this. Well, the woman who was supposed to be Dr. June Ross Mitchell doesn't show up for the first day of rehearsal or the second day. And this is an Australian. The whole cast was Australian except for me. She just happened to have been living in the States at that time. And when she was flying back, was like, and she nor her agents had decided to tell anybody that she was opposed to being vaccinated. And that was like one of the things that that had been like, you couldn't even get in the country, I think, at that point if you hadn't. So they were like, well, you need to get us a waiver or do something. We're like, well, with this little thing, are you crazy? You're totally screwing us. And so the woman who was supposed to play my wife, Minnie, Laura Gordon, the directors went to and like, Laura, you're an amazing actor. Could we have you now take over the role of Dr. June Ross Mitchell? This is on Thursday. We start shooting on Monday.
Oh my God.
We had to Zoom because she has a little baby. So we Zoom and she's like, oh, she's an actor that just has that gift to go, all right,
sure,
let's
I'll
do
it.
So she jumps in. Then
I didn't know that.
The guy who's the debunker, you know, who played, so he, we had another actor that we started rehearsing with who was having, couldn't really focus. They had a lot of other things going on in life and were just like unable to really like get a single line and was kind of like, we'll get him there. By Friday, we were like, this is not going to work. We start shooting on Monday.
Oh my God.
So Ian, who did end up playing Carmichael Haig and did an incredible job, got the job on Friday, had Saturday and Sunday to learn sleight of hand magic, memorize his lines, showed up just. So I was humbled by that. That's my sidebar. But then we get through the monologue. The boys are excited. Now I know I can step into this world. And one of the things that I wanted to bring creatively when I did get involved producerially was I felt it would be very important to continue to give the audience the experience of question and wonder. And I wanted the audience during the journey of watching the 90-minute show unfold before them to feel as off center, off balance, and off kilter as Jack does between what is actually happening and what may be something we're just seeing and what may be in our minds. Now, for me, as someone who presents a version of myself to the public and has a private life in which I've dealt with a wide range of things from addiction issues and alcoholism to nervous breakdown, intense anxiety and depression, suicide attempts, I felt like I know what it feels like before I did all of the mental health work that started 22 years ago when I got clean and then really kicked in, 15 years ago when I started to really work with professionals on some of the personality disorders and psychiatric issues that I struggle with. And one of the things that I feel like Jack just didn't do, it's 1977. He's a male figure of power that has no conditioning whatsoever to get help for the unprocessed trauma of losing his wife, mm-hmm. pushing himself so desperately with his career that he's now on the fray psychologically. He's drowning himself in alcohol. He is, that to me was the keyhole into right. making yeah. this music.
So you were able to put yourself into that role eventually.
And I thought to myself, yes, the possession, all the elements that make this a genre picture, the demonic stuff is all fun and fantastic. And I love that in the world of the film, but as a actor playing what was more something I could hold on to and grip yeah. was my own personal experience with when I have in the past been pushed past the point of safety,
yeah.
completely disassociated, completely seen things, completely had things happen that I couldn't explain, yeah. that I was like, holy yeah. shit. So that to me felt like a really not only interesting, compelling, but more complicated and meaningful mm-hmm. path to take with the character and the story. And the brothers were so excited about that. So we'd be shooting some stuff, and sometimes I'd be like, can we take a version where I'm just totally doing something so like I'm checking out in there? And they cut that into all the weird stuff yeah. as the movie starts to really.
Do you ever feel like, because you, not just in this character, but in so many of your other characters, you explore these levels of darkness, right? Do you ever find that it blends or becomes scary within your own personal life? That like the psychosis and the depths that you're exploring there are triggering, are a lot to take on.
I blame Fangoria magazine. It's where it all started for me. Yeah. No, interestingly, I'm a highly technical actor. I'm definitely not a person that when in complete necessity will utilize personal history only though to usually inform vocal expression, facial expression, because I do see the manipulation of my face, voice, body as a way of manifesting a kind of reality that is completely fake, but that the camera needs to believe is completely real. So I've kind of prided myself on being somebody that's had to go through deep, dark depths personally yeah. to survive. But when I'm making story yeah. happen, I believe it's a safe way to do it. Now, once in the film Prisoners, there's a moment where my character ends his life. And as someone who survived several suicide attempts, there was a moment when we shot a very grueling, very intense one-er sequence that involved violence, action, emotional stuff, all kinds of technicality work that I lost myself for like 10, 15 seconds. I kind of went somewhere that really sucked. And then luckily I was in the hands of a director who took such good care yeah. of me that I was able to get back and be okay. With the thing though that I think is interesting, and I hope you guys think this is interesting. I think it is. I was making a really grueling, difficult film, a Dracula picture called The Last Voyage of the Demeter, and I was getting my ass kicked every day by both the circumstances around the film and the production schedule and the Dracula actually kicking my ass. And my therapist, I'm doing like a Zoom therapy session from Berlin to my therapist in LA, and I'm sitting there with my wife, and I said, the therapist said, do you ever feel like the roles you come home with you? Like, what is yeah. the role you're playing right now? Does it ever come home? And I said, no. Like, I was offended that she would ask such a question, because I'm an artist who hangs up his costume, takes off his makeup, and goes home. And my wife looked at me like I was insane. And she was like, are you joking? And what I realized is maybe psychologically I don't put myself into places that are dangerous for the performance, but our bodies do. And
no,
my
bodies don't know where to
not know the difference.
It's so fascinating that you say that, because like in my own like journey of healing and therapy, for the longest time, I couldn't cry. Now I can cry on cue. It's not a problem. But for the longest time, I couldn't. My body would like not allow me to emotionally let this guard down for a very long time. And it was so frustrating because it was almost, it's like, because our bodies carry this.
Yes.
And so it's fascinating how we have to do this work in our own instruments to kind of break free of
pretending
that.
To right. die, pretending right. to yeah. get your ass kicked, pretending to lose your mind.
Yeah.
Your body doesn't know the difference. So that's the thing right. that you carry with you.
Your body doesn't know you're pretending.
There's this whole, like, I hope you guys find this interesting because I think this stuff is fascinating. There's this whole study about how our body keeps trauma in it in a way that like a workout does for muscles. So like the fascia in your body is the bottom layer of skin, top layer of muscle. And anytime you're in a stressful situation, you're breathing really heavily like this, you're like whatever it is, you're tearing fascia in the same way that you would a workout. And when you work out, you tear muscle too in the same way.
To build.
So it heals in a way to facilitate that, to do that again. And when you go through trauma, the same thing happens. Your body heals in a way to make that trauma easier, but it stays in your body. And you have to do active work right. to shift your body elsewhere.
That's amazing.
To change that. I just think it's fascinating. And as actors, we do it all the time. We have to.
Sorry, I'm coughing.
They're also telling us that we need to pivot. We could talk to you all day about this film. Mm-hmm. This is incredible.
Thank you very
Please
much.
Give it a round of applause. It is one of the best performances right. of the year by far. Typically on our show, we play games. We have Barbara come in for the sidebar segment, and she takes us through a game, but we're blessed to have her for the whole interview this time. However, we're still going to play a game. We're going to play a couple games. So first, we're going to play a game, the three of us, and then we're going to open it up, just like Night Owls in the film Late Night with the Devil, to you all. So our first game is called The Mashup of My Nightmares. And it is the ultimate film mashup. Yeah. Do you want to take us through how we're going to do it?
Well, we're going to take our films that we're maybe most known for, or really just you're the man of the moment with Late Night with the Devil.
Okay.
We're going to take that movie. We'll probably take Reanimator. And then and then we'll take Terrifier. And we're going to put all those together. And we're going to create a movie from those three films. And David's going to lead us off and give us sort of maybe a few characters and the setup of what it is. And then we'll do like a little round.
Okay.
Make a movie.
Okay. We're making a movie.
We're in a pitch room.
You guys ready to make a movie? Here we are. Hey, studio execs. Hi. How you guys doing? Yeah. Thanks for the water. Yeah. I appreciate it. It's always nice. So there's this, but we can springboard away.
Yeah, from sure,
our stuff. Sure. Okay. So there's this guy. It's now the late 70s. There's a guy who's trying to launch a new form of television. He comes from a world of producing and writing and performing for talk shows, and he wants to make a huge impact on the world. Now, unfortunately, a few years ago, there was a really terrible traumatic thing that happened where a number of people died on the set of his show. His show was canceled and his career was ended, but he won't give up his dream. So he's been released from the psychiatric facility in which he was contained. And he's decided he wants to start a thing that he wants to call reality television. So he gets a camera crew and a microphone. He goes to this place called the Miskatonic Institute. And he heads down into this place because he believes that they're doing some research. And he's going to get some stuff on camera. And he, you know, he starts to descend into this lab. And a closet opens. And there's this really tall, smiling a clown waiting for him. And he says to himself, I think I'm onto something here.
Yeah. But then he's afraid. So he kills the clown because he thinks the clown's coming to get him. And everybody knows we're afraid of clowns. So the clown dies. And then he realizes that he has some reanimation fluid that he just happens to have. And he's going to inject the clown with some reanimation fluid. And he's going to film the clown going around outside in the wild and see what happens.
I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's like a Frankenstein reanimated clown.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. And he goes out into the world and he stumbles upon a film festival that just happens to be happening. And
it's getting really meta.
And they're having a panel and he follows the clown in and the clown just decides,
ah! Oh God.
Just kidding.
We got you. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. How scary it is down there.
So anyway, the clown comes in and surprise scares the audience and the festival programmers are infuriated by this. So they kick him out. Both of them, they kick them out. They're like, you'll never work in this town again. We'll never give you a show. We'll blackmail you to all the studio execs.
But that tape of that reanimated clown ends up getting passed over to this young upstart of a little company called CNN. It's the beginning of cable news. And it happens to make its way onto televisions across the country. And all of a sudden, this fallen star of a late night talk show host is not only back and he's ready to get to the top again, he's got this buddy, this goofy clown that has been brought back from the dead who just doesn't talk but does goofy things like, you know, poke people's eyeballs out and cover them in gasoline, light them on fire, and cut all their skin off, you know.
Yeah. So the show is a really big success, especially, you know, back then when it was just the new frontier.
Totally.
And people just love having their enemies come to be in the audience and then surprising them with their own death.
It's a form of therapy.
So they kill people in the audience. And there's also this little girl that's in the audience. And
God, I'm going to get scared again.
And so she's also filming it too. And she decides that she's going to create her own YouTube show based on watching this other show that this guy has created. And he is the host along with the clown character. And so she's like an underground filmmaker. And then she is the beginning of like YouTube. And so we had CNN and YouTube. It's all been about
at the same time.
Yeah.
She's going and she's becomes a detective. You know, she's like, I have to expose this man who's actually killing people with this clown. They all think it's fun and games and hypnosis, but it's not. I know he's really killing people. And she makes it a point to expose you.
Yeah.
She makes it a point.
Yeah, I mean that, and it's like the with the Fellini crescendo. All of a sudden, because of all of the conduits that these people are with, all the murder, all the sacrifice, all of the horror, all of the dread. This is back in the day too, of, you know, people had like dial up, and it was, you know, the YouTube was very new. The computers, all of the IBMs and Apple Ones around the country started bursting into flames. It was just like a David Cronenberg film where all of a sudden all the people were staring at their heads started exploding.
Technology was the devil. It was just corrupting.
All the while you've got this one guy in a kind of cheesy leisure suit with big sideburns, like so excited because he's finally gotten everybody to pay attention to him again, and a clown is just sitting there smiling.
Yeah.
At the chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While the world is in flames.
Yeah.
Okay, that's our mashup.
What do you guys think? Would you buy it?
Would you say I'd go see this movie? I would. I'm sold.
Okay. We are going to, you know, we're going to ask you a couple questions, David. More questions. Just two in particular. But we also want to open up to the audience. But we do want to ask you, you know, one thing that's really important to our show, because we are called Scream Dreams, the nightmares that made us. Is there anything in your life, real or imagined, that really scares you? Or do you have a recurring dream that happens all the time, or just anything in life that...
Dream-wise, I mean, I love dreams. I practiced and studied high lucidity dreaming at one point in my life. I'm fascinated by what dreams are and what they represent. But I have had, when I was a young person, I had a recurring nightmare. I lived in Kansas and I lived in the attic of this house and I had a view of the backyard. But I had this recurring nightmare. And I was very young, like we're talking third grade, maybe even younger. But I had a recurring nightmare that I I had seen Wizard of Gore at this point, but I had a girlfriend who was wrapped in cellophane in pieces, buried in my backyard, who we could talk to one another telepathically.
Ooh. Oh.
Should I be getting this? Shouldn't be on tape, should it?
No.
Anyway, and they were digging in the backyard, and I was like, oh no, I'm gonna get in trouble. And she was like, don't worry, like, we could talk to one another. And it felt very normal to me. She was kind of like, but looked like a human sized Barbie. And then I recently had a dream that the snow was melting and thawing, and I got really nervous because I realized that everyone was gonna find out that I'd killed this guy. And that his body was under the stuff, and they were gonna see my Doc Martin boot prints around the body. That's
not
a terrible
really happened.
Nightmare.
This is just a cover up.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There's that.
Okay. There's that. That's scary. There's that. And then you wanted to ask David a question.
I did. Yeah. I did. Because I was curious if the devil would actually take over your body. Because I know there's some debate over whether the devil...
Yeah, like what happened at the end of the
was
movie.
Was inside of me or inside of Lily or... Yeah,
this
sure.
This is getting erotic, but I mean, you know, whether or not the devil was... If the devil...
To body swap with the devil.
To body swap with you, you know, not to be confused with any other thing. What mayhem do you think he would cause in your life? What do you think he would do?
Oh my gosh. The devil took over my body and started, I'd probably be behaving better than I do. I think that, you know, the devil always has a little more fun, and I have a lot of fun. So I don't know if he could keep up. Probably be like, okay, enough, slow down. What would be the most, like, I guess, depending on which version of the devil we're talking about, it'd be like, okay, you have to listen to every impulse within yourself and say, screw everybody else and do whatever it is that you want to do do what thou wilt.
Narcissist.
I would eat every Reese's peanut butter cup that has ever been made and screw everybody else out of getting their hands
on
any other one.
You would live life
deliciously. I love Reese's peanut butter cups so much, you guys. I swear to God, if I'm ever down, if I ever need something,
it's Reese's peanut butter.
Yeah,
they really are.
And if the devil had a wife, who would that wife be? What type of woman would she be?
Oh, Melania.
That's a perfect answer. For this crowd, probably.
Yeah.
So, and so now we're going to call up Bria Grant, our gal pal. Yes. Actress extraordinaire, writer, director, amazing friend.
Hi. And I'm getting people to ask questions. Yes.
They're all night owls themselves.
So she's going to go and bring you guys up, and then you can stand behind us just so you'll be on camera for later.
Here.
And ask your question to David.
And your camera's there. But
anybody who comes up will get a signed Scream Dreams poster, the first one.
We signed it, but then at the end, David, if you don't mind, we'll sign his name for you.
You got it.
Yeah, thank you.
These questions better be really, really good.
Right here.
I don't mess around.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. So, good to see you again. How are you, Camper?
I saw you earlier.
Nick.
Yes.
Such a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's really cool that you are a comic book writer. I'm a big comic book fan myself, and I think it's really interesting, horror comics specifically, how a lot of them were inspired by older movies and movies in the 70s and 80s. The filmmakers were inspired by those comics that they read. So I want to know, do you have any favorite horror comics?
I have so many horror comics that I love. I grew up collecting comics since the third grade, and one of the first things that I discovered that really got me, you know, razzed my berries was in the back of Clint's Comics back in Kansas City, the old EC creepy and eerie books. One of the things I loved about anthological storytelling was the way that you could have a full arc and get the poop scared out of you and then just move on to the next story. So I love those, but I also, you know, as a kid was very obsessed with certain ongoing characters. I love Tomb of Dracula, and I loved reading all the superhero monsters too. Morbius.
My favorite is Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing, so great. Man Thing as well. But I love the Weird War Tales of the Creature Commandos. And what I wanted to do with my comic, Count Crow, Crowley, which is out from Dark Horse Publishing right now. The new issue comes out this Wednesday. So please go to your local comic shop, support local comics, brick and mortar shops. We need them. Is a story inspired a lot of by cinema as well. Tonally, visually, I wanted the book to look like some inspiration of everything from Mad Magazine to definitely the, you know, Bernie Wrightson style of art, which Lucas Kettner, who does the art for the book, is just nailing every year. But I also thought about infusing, you know, 70s horror and kind of tonal creepiness that you got from like made for TV horror movies. And then there's a lot of homage to the classic movie monsters of yore. So yeah. But I think it's an amalgam. So many things.
Also, I wanted to mention one more thing. I actually work at a movie theater, and I've sold a lot of tickets to your movie. So,
yay!
That was good. That was great. I think I saw. Was there a lady? Yeah, come on up.
Like, right here.
Probably six there. Or yeah. So.
Yeah. I don't know. Hey, closer. Don't
David,
be afraid.
David, what's a role that scared you or made you uncomfortable or?
So roles that scared me, made me uncomfortable. Definitely Jack Delroy in Late mm-hmm. Night with the Devil. That was a very hard role for me to take on and say yes to. The character, Lester Billings in The Boogeyman, Rob Savage's film that came out last year, was an adaptation of a short from a book that I had loved. And when I was told they were adapting that short into the film, I had a totally different kind of preconceived idea of what that would look like or what that would mean, because the short's quite different than the feature film that grew out of it. When I heard that they wanted me to play Lester, was scared of that because that short was written at a different time, and not that the world isn't still totally riddled with homophobes and racists, because Lester's kind of both of those things. I just felt like he was so one-dimensional that I thought it was going to be maybe boring. And then I read what Rob and the team had done with the film, and I mean Beckinwood's such great writers and everybody that helped craft that story. I was scared because I was gonna be playing a man who had lost his kids, and even though, like we were talking about earlier, I don't actually try to go to those places, that's something that I don't even like I can't even like imagine when I think about like my kids or what it would do to me, how it would wreck me. So that was a hard one. And the very first time I've written and acted in and produced several things that are very personal to me. Made a film called Animals, made another film called All Creatures Here Below, and both of those stories really kind of grew out of my own personal life experience. Taking on both of those was very scary because it meant I was going to be, even though I wasn't playing myself, I was going to be leaning upon my life experience in a way that I don't do with any other roles or performances.
Thank you.
Oh,
here, I'll do it.
That's a very good question.
My job.
Very
good job.
Answer.
You can come.
Very good. Hi.
Hi, everybody. David, when you were talking earlier about like some of the things you've dealt with in your past, like depression, anxiety, mental health struggles and such like that, I'm somebody who's had some issues with that myself. You know, I'm a creative myself, and I'm someone who's very passionate about what I do. And like, I want to be able to rub shoulders with people like you because of how much I love this art form. And I love being able to share my ideas with the world, but I sometimes... How do I say this? I sometimes come on too strong to where I push a lot of the people I love away, and people who don't know me and don't really get what I'm about. And sometimes like my anxiety causes me to retreat to being this like wackadoo character that I have. Yeah. And my question to you is, how do you balance that? How do you balance like being too over the top with being, I mean, not be so over the top, but be able to get your point across to where you get people to like you and see you for the kind of artist that you are?
You know, Tom, that is a very good question. And it's good to see you again, by the way. Thank you. I'm glad that you're here. And it sounds like you're embarking on the journey, like the mental health journey. Are you, and if anyone else who's here tonight or who's going to watch this after it's been taped is in that place where they're feeling really scared and nervous about finding that balance between how much needs to be contained and brought internally so that we don't, inundate the people in our lives, and that we find that nice balance between how to exist in this world. It can look like so many different things. For you, it can be, you said sometimes you become really big and over, you know, over the top. Some people, it means they withdraw so much inside themselves, they get lost. For me, it can be a whole spectrum of things. But honestly, working with really great professionals was something that I had to commit to. Then surrounding myself with people who truly, and I mean truly, believe in and love me. And it's hard sometimes, I know, because I often wanted to just gravitate to the people that would say, yes, I want to be with you, and I want, but really being intentional about making sure you're choosing those people who want the best for you, because the people who do want the best for you will say to you, Tom, doing that thing, let's take a breath. You know, you've got really good ideas in there. We got to slow it down. Or for me, it can mean, David, you are inundating me right now. You're being too clingy, or you're not regulating right now. So you're not doing the work that you need to be doing to get yourself back to baseline. Or David, you need to brush your teeth, whatever that thing is. You need to surround yourself with people who love you enough that they're willing to be honest with you, and even if that's uncomfortable. So I hope that's a little help.
Thank you. And well, you know what? Congratulations to all of your success, and thank you again for
great
being.
Job.
Thank you. Great job.
It's also, it's about how do you be a human being? You know, I mean, I think that's one of the first things about being a performer or an actor or any artist. We kind of do that work about who we are inside.
I freak out sometimes, you guys, still, by the way. And yes, I tend to get more freaked out by musicians than I do directors, actors. But do you remember the first time we met? I was so freaked out.
Where was that?
On Zoom.
On Zoom?
We watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre together with Ryan Turek and a couple of other folks during pandemic. Yeah. You happened. No one told me you were going to be on the Zoom. We did like a group watch.
Yeah.
And I crap my pants. I was like, don't tell me about the crap. Oh my God. So sometimes I freak out so big and I have to like, get it right together, David. Bring it down. Yeah.
Well.
And here we are.
And here we are, friends.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
I actually had a very similar experience meeting Barbara yesterday, but kind of a follow-up question to Tom's question. Y'all were speaking earlier about like how the body keeps the score, and I'm curious, as creatives, as professionals, and just as humans, like what sort of modalities or practices do you come back to in order to move through those
Where's my book? I am deep into this work right now, because for me, it's about, when I get fragmented or when I'm getting dysregulated, the practices, and they involve everything from breathing work, which we all know is core, and that's where it all starts. Grounding work, finding the ways that my body's connected to objects, being able to walk away. It's so cheesy, but like starting to get dysregulated, taking that minute to walk away, or the hour, or this is really powerful. You'd be amazed, because there's so many things that when I start to get dysregulated, I feel like my body's telling me and all of my past is telling me needs to be sorted out right now. And if it's through an email or a text or a conversation in person, I have had so much luck and I keep failing, but I know I can get there in going next week. I'm actually going to really talk about this thing, because there's nothing that's life or death, unless it's actually life or death, that needs to be settled, decided within the next hour, within the next day, within the next week. So by the time I can actually get to my therapist the next week or whenever it's scheduled, then I'm like, so those are for me really good, as well as one other new tool that's been two new tools that I want to share that I think have been really good. I call it my time machine. I'm in a moment right now and I'm totally getting losing control, starting the anxieties overtaking me. I go in my mind and I do this time machine trick where I go 5 days from now, how much is this actually going to be?
Really awesome.
And the other one is when it's in a relational thing, like we're something starting to go off the wheels are coming off, trying to make myself a fly on the wall. So instead of only seeing this experience from my perspective and how I'm suddenly feeling like a victim in this situation or an agitator in this situation, give myself a perspective of being a fly on the wall and seeing the whole thing. Then you can talk to yourself the way you would talk to a friend. Mm-hmm. And I find that really useful.
Give advice. I had a therapist once say to me that being an adult is being able to live with unresolved issues. So you can't figure everything out, right? So it's okay. So I like your thought about, you know, 5 days out. If I'm dealing with something now, just maybe I should sit with it. And then in 5 days, it might look a little different.
It always does. It always does.
I do a lot of gratitude work. Like every morning, I write down everything I'm thankful for. Yeah. And I try to put it into my work in particular. Like, a lot of times I joke that we're perpetual job interviewers. You know, we're constantly trying to get the next job. We're professional job interviewers. And I'm always like, I'm so grateful that I get to do what I love today. I'm so grateful that I'm a full-time creative, you know? Yeah. I'm so grateful that I get to go to film festivals and watch incredible movies with incredible people, you know? Like how it just brings me back to center,
That's
you know?
Awesome.
That's a big record.
Yeah, thanks y'all so much.
Thank you.
This is such a wonderfully positive group of people. What, how great. And for being on camera, I know that's like nerve-wracking and it's very cool. Everyone's doing it.
Oh. Ooh, spoken for a big audience. This is scary.
Are you scared?
A little bit nervous.
But you know, people pay a lot of money for scare.
Yeah.
That's true.
You came to the right place, man.
Just on a lighter tone, before you talked about working with Ian Bliss. Ian Bliss, I don't know if I pronounced it right. I don't know if you realize, but in the 90s, there was this big show called Heartbreak High, which is very popular in the Netherlands, in Australia, and he would play the teacher in it. So I recently rewatched the show because it's on Netflix now. And then I saw him here in Late Night with the Devil, and I was like, hey, that's Mr. Bell from Heartbreak High.
That's so funny. I don't know Heartbreak High, but now I got to go back and watch it.
It was huge in the 90s, like especially in...
Was it like Degrassi or something like that?
Something like that.
Okay,
there's
cool.
There's actually a reboot now on Netflix. They made the modern version of it, but I know him from the 90s. Oh, he's a teacher.
That's amazing.
I was just wondering that. I thought he was really good in the movie. So I was just wondering, how was it to work with him? How was it to
I'm
going to
tell him that
Bell?
You asked me this question and that you brought up Heartbreak High. And I, like I said earlier, Ian was originally cast as Diabo. So Diabo, the cult leader, only shows up really at the end of the film and in a couple of quick documentary pieces of footage. So he was all set to play the leader of the Abraxas cult. And then all of a sudden there he is playing Carmichael Haig. And he was such a consummate professional. He was so wonderful on set. So every single person was so great. And they worked so hard and they made it so effortless. And their American dialects were so wonderful. I loved it. I loved every second of working with Ian. And again, when I was sitting next to him and he pulled out the cigar, made it disappear, made the flames come out of his hand. It's like, you son of a... You just learned this in the last 24 hours? He's like, I haven't slept.
He's going to be using it for the rest of his life. It's going to be his party trick for the rest of his life.
Right?
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looked like he did it for ages already.
Yeah. Thanks, man. That was a great question.
So maybe we have time for one more question.
Yeah.
And then we'll wrap it up.
I have a poster.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay, yeah. Come on down. I thought the little girl was so scary.
She's so great. So the interesting thing about Ingrid Torelli, who plays Lily, she's so sweet. She's like 16 when we were filming. She hadn't done much on-camera work at that point in her career. She scared the crap out of me. She really did. Genuinely, she would do things sometimes that were so creepy. But she also, like, on the weekends would babysit my kids. And, like, speaking of babysitter, the person who was helping with my kids a lot while we were there, it was so wonderful. Anna is married to this wonderful director named Joel Anderson. I don't know if you guys ever saw a movie called Lake Mungo.
Yeah.
But Joel was one of our on-set producers, and he's dear friends with the Cairns brothers. And Joel had said to Roy Lee, like, you should read this movie.
such a little family. It was awesome. Yeah.
Do you often bring your kids with you on when you're on location?
Almost always. In fact, I'm doing this show right now. This is the first time I haven't taken the whole tribe. We're kind of doing shifts because they're about to finish the school year. And he was working a really cool job that meant going to the same place every day. So this moment in my life is the first time we didn't all go together. And it's hard, but it's great. It's all good.
Last question. Yeah. Oh, hi, Mila. What's your name?
Reginald.
Hi, Reginald. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to meet you
it's
all.
It's great to meet you.
My question is, what is the one role project that you're passionate about that you have yet to do and you want to do?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Either in horror or out of horror.
Who's ever seen the Vincent Price classic, The Abominable Dr. Fives?
Yes.
We're going to put that on the universe today, okay?
Yeah, we're manifesting it right here in this room.
It's happening. Cool. That's it, Reginald.
Thank you. Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you so much. We always wrap up our show.
I want to ask one more question.
Okay, go ahead. You go ahead.
Because I, you know, with all the work that you have coming up, and I know what's the movie you're doing in Toronto? Or is it
it's a TV series.
TV series?
It's called Murderbot with Apple.
Okay. Yeah. And then you also have The Life of Chuck that you did with Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
And then Dust Bunny.
With Brian Fuller.
Yes. Yes. And they were both guests on our show, too. What can you say about either one of those? Do you know when they're coming out? What are they?
Dust Bunny, I believe, is destined to become a modern classic. Yeah. It is a film for all different ages, but it is super creepy, super fun, so weird. I haven't seen a movie made like it in a very long time. They don't make movies like it anymore. And Mads Mikkelsen, who stars in the film, is so awesome to work with. And what he's doing in the movie is so great. I get to play a wonderfully weird character. Brian is such a genius writer. And also Sigourney Weaver, who is always incredible, does stuff in this that I've never seen her do before. So that's really exciting. Life of Chuck, based on the Stephen King, is Mike Flanagan yet again bringing together all of these artists who love collaborating with him. And now I've been friends with Mike for a few years. We're in the same gaming group, so we play games usually at my place, sometimes theirs, like once a week, it seems like. But we never had worked together, and I was so excited that the chance finally arose that he wanted me to be in something, and he wrote this incredible, cool part for everybody in the film, but I felt really lucky because I love what I get to do. And it's a movie that kind of confronts the end of the world, but also ends in general, endings, and how scary they can be for all of us when we're so used to waking up every morning and everything does have its like cyclical end. The years have an end, but there's always one more, or, you know, so wrestling with those ideas. It's a beautiful, beautiful film. I've gotten to see, we did a, what did we call it? Chuck Bunny. Chuck Bunny. We did Chuck Bunny one night at Flanagan's house. So Brian brought, Dust Bunny, and Mike had Life of Chuck, and we sat in the Flanagan cinema, and it was the Boulets and Flanagan and Kate and Fuller and me and Lee and Eve and Jason Segel was there, and we all just watched these incredible movies back to back.
Wow.
I love it.
And I was in both of them.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, okay, yeah.
We always wrap up our show with this question to all of our guests, and it is, what is your nightlight? And what we mean by that is, in the midst of all the dark and terrible, scary things, all the nightmares, what is the thing that at the end of the bad dream, when you wake up in the middle of the night and you look out into the world, that lets you know that everything is going to be okay?
I think it's story. I always come back to story, because the reality is, like, even the people and the things that I love the most and that are the closest to me could, because of the chaotic terror of this universe, be gone tomorrow. And I always think the story is so wonderful, because when stories executed properly and when stories are told, we're all reminded, as much as this crazy dark universe tries to convince us otherwise, that we are not alone. And I need that. I cling to that, because I so often slip into the illusion that I'm alone.
And that's something that's really important to me, that we're all, it's like Gonzo says, in the Muppet movie, like, we're going to go back there someday. We're all in this together and we're all going to go back to, we're in this thing together, if that makes any sense.
Well, thank you for being with us together.
Thank you.
We've so enjoyed having you on the show. Thank you, David, for being with us and for sharing your insights about life and horror and creativeness. And you've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody. And please thank all of the volunteers that you see. Give them cookies, buy them popcorn, give them sodas, give them tips. Just, I mean, I'm sure that many of you out here are volunteers for the festival. Yeah. Maybe you're not because they're out doing the work right now. But yeah, it's, these things don't exist without them.
Thank you, Overlook. Yeah. Thank you, Bria, for helping us. Thank you, Film.
Yes.
Thank you to all of you who are here today. Thank you to everyone who's going to the theaters to see these films. You can, if you like what you saw, if you haven't used the QR code yet, please like, follow, subscribe. We're at Screen Dreams on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, I'm Catherine Corcoran.
I'm Barbara Crampton.
This is Scream Dreams. Remember to leave the light on.
Remember.